time now, I'm going to switch doctors and go to Dr. Boyle. The Dr. Boyle's is the one I've been going to. And,
because that means a whole new, now, they ought to be able to go to and look at the records of the other doctor that you've come from.
Well, I don't know what it is, but the first three times I went to Dr. Boyle, he was very concerned. And the next to the last time I went to him, he said, I wouldn't touch you with a 10-foot pole. He said, I want to tell you one thing. He said, how was it he put that now? I'm trying to remember the words that he said, physically you're in one of a mess, you know. And I said, well, thanks a lot. You know, I asked him, I said, you want me to run or walk to the nearest funeral parlor? And he stopped and looked at me, and he says, well, I think we can work with you. But he says, I want you to go to a specialist. He says, I want you to see Dr. Anderson. He said, he can work with you and probably find out your trouble quicker than I can. So the next time I go back to him, he said, I've been talking to Dr. Thomas. He said, and I think we should run this sugar test and this thyroid test and all this. So now they're going to postpone Dr. Anderson and take these other tests before I go to see Dr. Anderson.
Well, you're real lucky. At least you talked to your former doctor.
Yes, I think so, because this is what I wanted to do in the beginning, was to get all these records and save me a lot of explaining and a lot of, save him a lot of time if he just get the records and go over. But I don't know whether now that he thinks he might have left something out, or I might have gotten worse since I went to Dr. Thomas and it's been that long, or just what. He's kind of changing his method. You know, kind of had me worried in the last 2 weeks.
Well, just so you get all fixed up, anybody can go out and make hay.
Yes, I'm not going to give up. If I die out in the hayfield, I'll be happier than I would if I was home sitting in the chair.
You know, that's there's not much light work out in that hayfield, Shirley.
Well, I've been doing a lot of driving. I do the driving. I let them do the heavy work. Cause I buckle my knees, go buckle off from under me anymore. I can't do the work I used to do out
what
there.
What driving do you do? You run the rake.
Well, yes, either that, any tractor work, I can do this, or drive the truck and let Johnny pick the bales up and load them in the truck, or pull the wagon and let him load the wagon, and Berman will load when he gets through baling. But if there's a rain cloud coming up and it looks like it's going to catch us, I'll get out there and load and let Johnny drive, because he's a little bit slow. He's good, and this year he can throw a bale just like Berman can. You pick it up and toss it up like it was a peanut, you know.
Is that right?
Oh, yes. Boy, that boy's really been a lot of help. I don't know, we're going to miss him now that he's in school. See, Berman, he's going to take off 2 weeks of his vacation and put up hay.
Yeah.
So, Johnny in school, we won't have
Johnny
him until about
take
4
off
o'clock.
From the school.
No, I wouldn't do that. I wouldn't take him out of school.
You just have to take him out half day, because you don't make hay of a morning.
Well, then you got to go over and get him.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I just might, but I hate to do that. See, he gets in at 4 o'clock.
Yeah.
And a lot of time, a lot of light.
If he could, and like you said, we don't start until dinner time,
yeah.
Right around dinner time, 11 o'clock. And we can get it all raked and bailed
yeah.
By the time he gets in from school. Then we can pick it up in the field.
Yeah,
help us
that's a critical part, isn't it?
But that's about 4 o'clock. If you're going to get any rain, that's about time you get your rain.
Yeah. It'd be nice just to go ahead and get it all in and not have to wait.
That's right.
Now, do you have a place, when you get on your wagon, can you drive under something?
Those sheds there in the yard.
Yeah.
We can pull it right up underneath those sheds there and leave it there until it stops raining.
Yeah.
So
if that's in that wrong direction. No. You can put it up there too, don't you?
Yeah, in both barns. See, we got the carrier in this barn, the one where you put it up, you know, in the hayloft.
The elevator?
The carrier. I guess we must have about 400 bales in that one barn now.
Yeah.
And I think he can get about 800 in each barn. Or better. Maybe a little more in the far barn down there. But, anything else, I don't know where we're going to put it. He wants to try to sell some out of the field for $1 a bale and not have to pick it up, you know, let them go along behind the baler and pick it up.
Let them pick it up.
Uh-huh. And that way we don't have to worry about storing it.
If Marvin bought it, see, he'd want it hauled.
Well.
Because he hadn't got any way to haul it.
You got that big old truck, but that's a lot of bother. You know, it's got those high sides on it.
Oh, yeah.
I guess he can get about 50 bales on there, couldn't he?
On
with
the
that
truck.
Big, with that big bale, with that big.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a lot of trouble. Taking it and stacking it in there, and then unstacking it, and then stacking it in the barn.
Well, he don't get home in time.
He'd have to take, and I think he took all his vacation during the time Mrs. Guthrie was in the hospital.
Yeah.
Or most of it, anyway.
Yeah.
So. But, we've got those wagons there. He can use those wagons to haul
just,
it on.
Just pull that over there.
That's all he'd have to do. and the way Johnny and I, Berman doesn't like it, it makes him nervous. But it makes it a lot easier on Johnny and it makes it a lot easier on me. We get Timmy in the truck, in the back end of the truck, and he stacks it. And Johnny goes along behind the baler. The baler's coming off like this on one side.
Mm-hmm.
And then I take the truck on this side and stay with the back of the body of the truck right even with the end of the baler. And then as Berman goes along, I go along like this. Johnny walks along behind here and catches them as they come off of the baler, throws them onto the truck. Timmy stacks them. We keep right up with them and not a bale hits the ground.
That makes Berman nervous.
Yeah. Because when he goes around the corner, I'm going around the corner and he's got one eye on me and one eye on the hay and one eye on where he's going. Takes three eyes and he doesn't have them.
Yeah.
Now, Johnny, I'd like to see that. Yeah, that's you all going to be doing that this afternoon?
Uh-huh.
Now, I would like to see that guy.
Now, Berman will be in around 4:30.
Yeah.
Berman and Johnny will be in around 4. So we're going to jump down there and start. I imagine it'll be about 5 if everybody gets together before everybody gets in no rain.
Yeah.
I imagine it'll be about 5 before we start picking them up.
I would sure like to see that.
But that's the way it goes. The baler on one side and the truck on this side and the body of the truck back here. And Johnny walks along right next to where the bales come out there, though. What do you call that? The chute, I guess you would call it. And he just picks them up, throws them in the truck, and Timmy stacks them, and we go along.
Now, you all really put up hay over this weekend.
Yes, and we could have, he put more up last night if I'd have let him, but I told him, I said, if it gets wet, it just gets wet. Wasn't quite ready, and he knew it, and I knew it.
Yeah.
But he kept looking at that dark cloud. And I said, and he was already tired. He was so tired, he couldn't keep his hands from shaking. They were going like this.
Well, you put up 600 bales.
Well, not all. No, we had about
200.
About 200 in the barn, I guess.
That's a whole lot.
But see, he'd been mending fences. We'd been all day Saturday. We ran calves. Had those buyers out there to sell those few calves, scrawny things that was out there in the field.
Well, you made money.
And we did. We worked for it. We even roped a calf down there in the field. The 17-year-old boy wanted a pretty heifer, and I had already registered her in our name. And she was 3 months old, and I sold her for $160 to this boy.
3 months old?
She's 3 months old. And I went ahead and sold her because she's a beautiful animal. I mean, I really wanted her. We took her off the cow. So now I have to get her up to the barn and milk her out a time or two. I think she'll be all right. But I didn't like to do that, you know, selling that young.
Yeah.
But the boy had to have him for a future farmer animal.
Yeah.
So, and he really liked that heifer. And I had just registered her in our name because I wanted to keep her. And his mother said, "Now look at there." She said, "You know how to pick 'em." She said, "That's the only nice one you got in the whole bunch." And it was. I had to agree. So she took the one that I had registered, or picked the one for the boy to raise. So we went down there in the field, and I couldn't get them out. You know how in the heat of the day they wouldn't leave the shade?
Yeah.
And they wanted to take them back. They were from the other side of Jacksonville. They wanted to take the calf back with them when they went. So I said, "The only way we're going to get that calf is to rope them." And Berman had a rope there, and this 17-year-old boy and I went down the field. I told everybody else to stay at the house because all they did was, you know, get them running around in the field and couldn't do anything with them. So I told Berman to stay out of the field. So he and this fella talked, and this boy's mother, and the boy and I went down there, and I walked around them and got them all up in a huddle with a couple of buckets of feed, and let the leaders eat out of the buckets of feed. And we kind of scrounged the calf in between two cows, and he just slipped that rope right over the calf's neck. But then he dropped the rope, and the calf took off, and I grabbed a hold of the end of the rope, and that calf took me for the biggest ride you ever saw.
Oh, they can really got power.
And
they?
He pulled me right across there's a branch down there, a muddy branch, and it's about 3 feet wide, and I couldn't jump it. So the only thing I could do was go along, you know, for the ride. He pulled me right across that muddy branch. All I had time to do was kick my shoes off, and I went right on into the mud and across the other side. And there was one place there, I don't think there was any bottom to that thing. I thought I was swallowed up for sure. If it hadn't been for that calf, I think I'd have gone down. Quicksand. We came across the tree, and boy, I wrapped that thing around the tree.
Yeah.
And that boy was afraid to get his boots wet. He wouldn't jump the branch, and he just stood there looking at me. I felt like killing him. I was ready for a shower that day. But he was tickled with that calf. He couldn't wait to get it. He's going to put it in the fair in October. Now, it's going to be little yet.
Yeah.
I don't care how much feed and he had a milk cow. He's going to put it on this milk cow.
Yeah.
So it ought to grow off pretty good, being on the milk cow. And he said he can't wait to get home to brush her up, you know, and put a halter on her and really tame her down. So we want to go to that fair. It's in Callahan, Florida, just the other side of Jacksonville. I'd like to take the kids up there, but I want to see what he does with that calf.
Yeah.
I just want to see what he does.
Do you remember the name?
Rushing was the guy that bought the calves Saturday afternoon, and this guy came in the morning. What was his name? I wrote it down. I write all these buyers, you know, name and addresses down, but I can't remember. I don't remember what that man's name was. Sure don't. Rushing from over at Micanopy is the one that bought the bunch, you know, the rest of them that I had. Yeah. Well, Pat, I didn't use these napkins, but I swear I'm making a mess out of them.
Shelly, you know, I'm sort of excited over the prospect of that fluffer. That's going to save you a lot of work. I do believe.
Yes, but we're fighting over it because he wants to take the money that I wanted to buy a Cassis with, you know, that little bull.
Yeah.
This is what I've been. He told me if I sold those two scrawny bulls and got the price I was asking out of them, that I deserved to get that bull. Well, I sold them and I got the price I wanted for. So now I'm looking forward to that little bull. You still want to sell it. I'm afraid you're going to get attached to him and won't want to leave.
That fluffer, though, I can see that you just need it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just.
Now, in a way, that'll save you steps.
Yeah.
And the little bull will be a lot of extra. You know, I wish there was some way I could put a little bull or two in with a heifer or two with a little fence between them. It's it's just the feeding of them, you know, basically, that causes the trouble, and why they can come up and get a little attention.
What you need is that little calf creep thing that I've got there.
Yeah,
it's been my that has been my right arm with those calves. And if I really get Berman to do what I want him to do with it, it would be a lot better yet. I want him to put it out in that field, you know, in front of the house there, next to the water trough.
Yes.
Right there where I won't have to walk so far.
Yes.
We have to go and back and forth to the barn anyhow, and that's not far from the house.
Yeah.
And if he put those calves, I put those calves in that field there, and if he would put that calf creeper in there and put those iron bars out so far from the calf creeper and let them go up under that bar to get their feed. Now, that would keep the big ones out because they can't get down and under those bars like the little ones can.
Yeah.
So then you're only feeding the little ones,
yeah,
you see, that need it the worst. And they're good about, you know, dividing up. There's five or six, seven can get on one side and seven on the other, or eight,
yeah,
at one time, if you had that many.
Yeah. And they can just eat so much and they're quick.
That's right. But the big ones, you see, would knock all the little ones out of there if you didn't have something for them to crawl up underneath and get to the feed.
Yeah.
Keep the big ones away.
Yeah.
And that way you don't have the expense of another fence or another field. Or I really like that combination. If he could get out there and do it for me, he's always so busy, I hate to ask him.
Yeah.
And so I've been kind of working with them. I've been dividing the calves from the heifers and the heifers from the calves, and that's a big job because they all come up together.
Yeah.
So I just try to keep them separated with this last bunch. So the next bunch of calves we get, I'm going to try to have him fix that thing. It wouldn't take a couple hours maybe to weld those four pieces on each side. No, three pieces on each side.
Yeah.
He needs four fence posts and six pieces of iron, angle iron. That's all he needs to fix it with.
You know, a little equipment like that can save you so much trouble.
Yeah. The frame from that old car out there would be just the thing for him to pull, if he could pull that thing off of there. And you know that old car of Daddy sitting out there under there? It's got a good length of angle iron. He could cut those two in half, and there he'd have enough angle iron to, well, he'd have two more, he'd have to have two more bars, one for the front and one for the back.
Now, the thing that saves me time about this, these little slips that I feed in down here.
I like that.
Is that just one animal can get in, and he can stand there and eat at his leisure.
Uh-huh.
And they can't crowd him out. They don't have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I found out just by using those is that my two best cows are slow eaters. And if they are out there as free-for-all, free choice, or whatever they call that, they don't get much.
That's right.
Yes, sir.
And it's always those few wild ones that they really keeps the herd disturbed, too, if you're doing
way.
They root them out of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of rooting going on.
Root them out of it, and then the others don't get near their share.
And you can't put enough out there to fill them. Mm-hmm. No, sir. Faith, Shirley just came over to spend a little time. We're imposing on her. She got
no, you're not imposing. I'm enjoying it. But if there's any work you have to do with the calves, I'd be glad to help you with it. Just so.
Yeah, I'll let you take them back with you.
I hate to see good animals like that go to market, you know.
No, I know it's something falling. Mamma was sitting out on the front porch.
She's feeling tired.
Yeah,
oh.
Boys, you know, just just in the winter, you know.
Oh. How is she doing?
Oh, it's so nice to have a little visit, isn't it, Trey?
Yeah. It sure is. Have Charlotte feeling good.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel much better than I was here a couple of two, 3 weeks ago.
And hear about that baling of hay. Okay.
I'll feel a lot better when all that hay's in the barn.
Yes, yeah. And they've got they've really got the grass over there now.
Boy, you can go down around, you know, around that pond down there. I drove down there. I was I went down to see where those cows was at to show those people about the that little cat that we wrote. And I couldn't see where I was going. It was up over the hood of the car and up past where I couldn't see, you know, where I was going. I had to get out of there and get up, go back and get the truck.
Yeah.
Come back, go in there.
How about that?
But it was really, it's really high. That's part of what he's got down now. Part of some of that on one side of the field is so heavy. I doubt if it's going to be ready this afternoon, Mail.
Well, I just love Charlotte. For lunch.
If you had to pluck her.
Well, honey, I don't
okay.
know. I better.
You know, if she can't
well,
take,
then
I better get fed.
Because she got plenty of food. There's no,
yeah.
No. You wanna take her home and use the telephone?
I can do that.
Like I did?
Yeah. If I'll do that. Use the telephone.
I don't have a car anymore. I
and
drove
I'll,
over.
I'll
what happened to
your
car?
The whole rear
yeah.
end went out when we took the big kids to the beach on Friday. And coming back, there was such a noise,
oh.
you wouldn't believe it. And what happened was that the shoes and the brakes, you know, and the back wheels gave loose.
Oh.
And boy, it's just a mess.
Oh, my.
So
my.
He's going to have to take that off and get new shoes and put them in there.
Yeah.
And
now he's got to do that and make hay too.
Yeah, he's got to get that car fixed, because if I should need it to go up to school or something, then I can't. Here I wanted to get the boys' hair cut for school. I haven't done that. They went to hair school with their hair down like a girl's.
Yeah. Shut up, what was that? You all went over and spent a... You took a little vacation over at the beach, didn't you?
We'd promised the children that we'd take them over and spend a weekend over at the beach.
Yeah.
So we went out. We left here on a Friday, stayed Saturday night, and all day Sunday came back Sunday evening. Oh,
they
it was.
That.
They really did. We went, we walked all over St. Augustine. And the week before, I couldn't even walk.
Well, now that's it.
Oh,
there you are.
I think we walked at least 10 miles, you know, just sightseeing St. Augustine.
Yeah.
There are some beautiful places over there.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful places. And so much for the kids to see. And, say, there's one place over there. They've got a, they call it the House of Dolls. And Bonnie wanted to go in there, and we so we all went in. And they've got dolls, I'll bet you, well, back in the 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
They're just gorgeous. Have you been in there?
No, I haven't. I
they've got four
of
rooms of dolls and toys and all kinds of knickknacks, you know, that made out of wood, you know, and mechanical operating dolls. Some would play instruments and some would chop wood. And
the old ones were clever.
They were carved all out of wood, the whole thing. Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah.
And the kids just, Daddy thought that was so fascinating. And he's been trying to carve something out of wood since we got back from there and it hasn't worked very well. So, I don't know.
I don't, you know, I don't think I could go to the beach anymore anyhow. The prices are so out of reach.
It cost us $25 just to stay overnight.
Yeah.
Well, see, we had to rent two different cottages, combined cottages. We just had inner doors that we could open, and they were together because of so many kids. But it cost us $25. Well, it'd been cheaper for us to come back and go back again the next morning, really. But it involved took so much of our time going back and forth that we couldn't have got so much sightseeing done over there in Hawthorne.
Yes, I know. But you had you got a lot of you all had lots to do over there.
There's one thing they wanted to see was the history of St. Augustine and this of. A play that was acted out, The Cross and the Sword, over there, and we didn't get to do this. And they were very disappointed. We were going to go back, but then there was the last Saturday, I think, was the last show. So we missed.
And it was sold out.
No, it didn't start until about 8 o'clock, I think it was, at night, see?
Yeah.
By 8 o'clock, I'm wore out. I'm asleep at 9 o'clock, and I probably would have fell asleep sitting there, because we had walked the entire day, and I really wasn't well when we went over in the first place, but I was trying to hold myself together so that the kids would have a good time. So I did all this walking. We went to the old fort and the old jail and places like that. And, you know, the kids see this and they see that and they want a souvenir. And, boy, I'm telling you, it cost us a couple of $100 before we could turn around. So they had a good time, and it was something I don't think they'll ever forget.
Well, let me tell you, Shelley, the way that they figured out a couple $100 just nothing.
No, I hadn't really, it was just Vermin and I wouldn't have enjoyed it near as much. So if you have the kids, you enjoy it so much more.
Okay.
It costs you more, but you enjoy it more.
This, the little lady now, who is it? The Glisten family down there, they all straightened out now.
Absolutely. I saw her. Well, we took her daughter to the beach Sunday. Friday.
Oh, she went with you.
Uh-huh. Berman took off from work Friday, and we went back to the beach again Friday, see, and spent the day, because we promised them one more day before school started, so that was the last of our promises. So we went back Friday, and we took little Susie with us, so she's bigger than Johnny is. She's a year older, I think, than Johnny is.
Yeah.
But we all went over and had a nice day, and I took a big lunch over and spent, we had dinner and supper on the beach, at the beach. Over there, and they spent all afternoon in the water.
Yeah.
They had a time. They really had a time.
Yeah, there was that last rain.
When we got back, it was just that dark, and we dropped Susie off at her mother's house, and her mother had come in from work. Now her father's at Disneyland in Orlando working, so her mother's there by herself at night because her older daughter is going to college with their son. You see, and Ocala. So that left Lillian there by herself. And we dropped Susie off. And Lillian came out and she said, "Oh, Shirley," she said, "you don't know how happy I am." She said, "that job is just wonderful."
Oh,
she's
really?
Been working there now 3 weeks.
Uh-huh.
And she said she just loves the work.
Yeah.
She's working in personnel at the hub.
Yeah, think of that.
This is where she's at now. And she really likes it.
And she don't have to worry about herself now.
No, and she's worrying about everybody else. All the girls at the office that has problems, they come to her because she's older than they are. So now she's worrying about somebody else for a change.
Yeah.
And she can't wait till the next morning to go back to work.
I never see Ms. Listen anymore.
She liked to have an accident. She was Margie, her daughter. She was with Margie and someone else, I don't know, and Margie's daughter and Mrs. Glisten was in the car, I believe. But anyway, they lost control of their camper trailer that they had on the back of the car. And she was involved in an accident somehow or another. And she was the only one that really held together through the whole thing. Everybody else went to pieces, but she and the little girl got cut or something or another and went all to pieces. And the old lady was the only one that really kept her head all through the accident, you know. But they said it was a close call, you know, in the way everything turned the camper over and I think demolished it. But and the girl, the young girl, was inside the camper, and she crawled out the back window. So it was a little tiny vent window she crawled out of. But she all that happened was a little bit of a cut on her arm. But the old lady is, that is her heart is. I call her the old lady because this is what Lillian calls her, you know, all the time. And, she said as bad as her heart was, she was the one that they were worried about the worst, but she was the one that came through it the best. So.
Now, Shirley, she was talking to you about that holding that fish camp together. And she had to work them men to keep them at it.
Yes. You mean old Mrs.
Glisten.
Yeah. She was the backbone across creek from what I understand.
Yeah.
The iron ruler.
Yeah. It wasn't Tom.
No. Well, he was sort of, he was easygoing, see.
Yeah.
And he got along a lot better with all the people out there. And he made the decisions if she wasn't around. But now if he wasn't around, she made the decisions, you know. And it always would cost them more when she do any business with them than it did with him. So they never wanted to do business with her.
Yeah.
But then when he died, they had no choice. And they all had to negotiate with their business through her to do any business with a dealer in town.
Yeah.
See, the dealers would buy from her. They would have to sell to her to get to the dealers. She had sort of a franchise, I guess you'd call it, on the whole works out there.
So that way she could give them what she wanted to?
Well, she gave them very little. She didn't give them what they were getting from her husband, Tom.
Oh, really?
She'd always be the far lower on her prices. She'd give them less for their for the fish than what Tom would give them. He'd always give them maybe 2-3 cents more a pound than what she would give. And after a while, it all added up, so she was making a good business for herself.
Yeah. Well, she was in business several years after he died. She didn't have to stay in business forever at that rate, then, would she?
No.
Now, I never talked with her about it. I'm adding she would tell you.
Yeah,
but you all have talked about it.
Well, I don't know, I've gotten a little bit from this one, a little bit from that one, you know, and then from what she's told us, I've put it all together. She's I don't think, very proud of the way she has treated all the neighbors around there, and she feels sort of, I don't know, left out or something now because they won't have much to do with her, you know, because they're not really a friend to her. They're more or less neighbors, and they'll say howdy and all this, but they don't pass any time of day with her. And this hurts her.
Oh, there's not many of the old ones now, are
there? Well, people like Mrs. Guthrie. Now, as soon as she leaves Mrs. Guthrie's house, Mrs. Guthrie comes over and tells me what goes on, you see. So this is where I get most of my information.
Yeah.
But you couldn't call them friends because she's so much against Mrs. Glisson for what she's done in the past, you see. And then there's Mrs. Bass.
Yeah.
And Bernie was a big fisherman, Bernie Bass. Was a very big fisherman there. The boat nights won't have anything to do with Mrs. Glisson. They're big fishermen. Anyone that has anything to do with fish doesn't want anything to do with Mrs. Glisson. They're all very independent now. They all sell to their own dealers.
Yeah.
So they, for years, they haven't had anything to do with her or her them. And now she wants to be friends with them. Well, how can she expect to? When really, if she'd have kept prices at a moderate, you know, after her husband died, she would have fared out a lot better, I think. She'd probably be still in the fish business. You know,
they kind of remember all of it.
That's right. That's why they all broke off, you see, and went different ways. Each one of them grew more independent as time went on.
Oh, you mean before she gave it up, they were breaking off?
That's right. Because, see, they found dealers that would come out and deal with them individually,
yeah,
and give them more than what she was giving them for their fish.
Oh.
So she eventually lost all her trade, and that's how she happened to get out of that business. Because she was trying to make it all in one day.
Hmm. I just wonder how she'd be. You know, she got that glint in her eye.
She tells me, she says, you know, for a woman that's only had 4 years of schooling, she said that she only went to the fourth grade. And she said, for a woman that's only went to the fourth grade in school, she said, I have really come a long way. She said, I've done all right with myself. So she's all right, I guess she's proud of what she's achieved.
Do you think people who don't go to school much always have that feeling of sort of showing off?
I don't know, because by golly, I've met some very nice people, and they're well-to-do people, and they haven't had but 3 and 4 years of schooling.
And they don't make.
They're
a point
millionaires.
Of it.
They don't
make a point of it.
No. And if they can read and write and keep up with the times, and if they can study enough from a newspaper and what's going on and listening in different conversations, I don't think it makes any difference.
Oh, Lord. You know, my experience, they have. have all the advantage. All this school business just weakens your mind.
That's exactly what, we had some friends out for dinner here. Oh, he's graduating. He's going to be a architect, you know. He already graduated, but I don't know what he's doing. He's just biding his time right now, I think, until he moves out. But anyway, he came out to the house and said, he was sitting there, and I had roast, pot roast. Now, I want you to listen to this. I had pot roast and gravy, mashed potatoes, and carrots, and peas, and beans, and just anything you could think of on the table. And I thought they were, you know, I had everything just right. So he comes in, he sits down, and he says, pass the gravy, please. So passing the gravy, and he pours all this gravy in the middle of his plate. He says, pass the biscuits, please. So passing the biscuits. He broke up all these biscuits. He sat there with a spoon eating this, you know. And I thought, my Lord. Here is all this food, you know, prepared to eat right, you know, and here he's eating. And I thought, well, boy, I feel good now. You know, I said, this somebody real down the earth. You know? So I sat down. I said, boy, you must be a Southerner for sure. I said, I've never seen anybody go after biscuits and gravy the way you have before, you know, get at the main course of the meal. He said, this is real down to earth eating. And he sat there eating that gravy and biscuits with a spoon. I thought I'd die. Here he was with a goatee, you know, and all dressed up. And I thought, well, when he walked in, you know, I was so nervous because I'd never met him before.
Yeah.
He's a friend of Berman's. And his wife was all dressed up to kill, you know, and so everything just, I was so nervous. And I was more, never some more at home and at ease in my life as I was that day with him for the rest of that day.
Is that right?
After he started eating his biscuits and gravy. We still talk about that.
He talked.
Well, he says he's been going to school I don't know how many years. And he looked over at her and he said, He says, Berman, he says, I don't know, we were talking about education. And Berman says, well, he says, I had to take the equivalent of a high school education in the Marine Corps. He says, I didn't get very far myself like that to this boy. And the boy turned around and he said, he stopped eating his gravy and biscuits and he had gravy down on his beard. And, you know, I couldn't help but laugh at him. He turned and he says what was her name? I don't even remember her name. But anyway, called her name. And he says, what the hell have I been going to school for? He says, this is really living.
Eating it there on your new dining room table.
Yeah.
Now,
he's
one of Berman's old friends?
He's I don't think he's as old as I am. I think he's 35, maybe.
Yeah.
Something like that. 34, 35.
Well, where'd he crawl up from?
He was born in, Berman was born in Largo, and he was born somewhere around St. Petersburg, I think, he said. But,
he got to know him over
at the university. Uh-huh.
Over here at the
mm-hmm.
campus?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
That's where they got to know one another. So.
Oh, I see.
Well, you see, he's, they have, how did they do this now, if I can remember what Berman told me? They have somebody from each village that's in charge of that village or something.
Yeah.
This is where he met Bill. This is what Bill did.
Yeah.
See, and...
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I don't know exactly how they work it there.
So he's known him for a year or two.
Oh, he's known him 3 years now since he's been at Corey Village. See, Berman was over in Diamond Village,
yeah.
And then they transferred him over in Corey Village, and then he met this Bill, and Bill was in charge of the village there when he went over.
Yeah.
So, and they've got to be just like this, you know, over there.
Yeah. Well, what does he know? Does he know anything about Berman's business?
No, he's strictly,
that's correct.
What do you call it? What is this, oh, architectural, I guess.
Oh.
This is all he does.
Oh.
Draw and plan buildings and
things
like this.
I see.
And this is what he's been going to school for.
Well, he'd know about a lot of Berman stuff then, at least in a
building,
way.
Yes, uh-huh. In building,
building.
And Berman's helped him out He said in a lot of his subjects, a lot of his preparation that he had to have for tests and all, Berman's given him a lot of good ideas, he said, when he was out there. So evidently he does know something about what Berman's been doing.
Berman probably knows more about the materials and putting things together.
Yeah, and he came up with some ideas of using this, I don't know, some stuff that was out there, some fungicides or something that was out there that they got together to use the substitute trees or something or another to make the picturesque architectural building that he had and the landscaping of it, and Berman gave him some ideas of how to put it together and whatnot. So he said that it was very impressive when he got through with it, and that's what made his grade high as it was.
Oh, really?
But this guy is a sharp cookie when it comes to...
Well, now, he don't get out your house. He don't have a chance to get out much, does he?
No, he came out that one time. Jan is his wife's name. His name is Bill. They came out there to the house, and they had a little boy, Grant. He's about 6 years old, I guess. And they spent the whole day. They came out early and spent all day, and they hated to go home that night. And the boy cried. He pitched a fit when they left there. He wanted to stay and play bows and arrows. So they've been going to come back out since, but they've been so busy with graduation and all here lately. And when I was in Orlando, during the time I was in Orlando, Jan had Berman up for dinner a lot. And that's, too, again, how they got to be so close.
Oh, yes, while he was there in town.
So a lot of times Berman wouldn't even, he'd come out and milk the cow, and he'd go back in and he'd visit with him a while.
Yeah.
Or he'd stay and have supper and then come out late and milk the cow.
Yeah, just let the old cow wait. They don't mind as much as people think.
Berman's pretty good about milking the cow at a certain time. Since I quit milking altogether, he tries to get home in a... He tries to milk between 5 and 5:30.
Yeah.
So,
well, that's the best. Of course, he could just set it up for an hour or two and milk after supper,
yeah.
And then it wouldn't put him out quite so much. Faye?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we have a good time. But you know, about as good a time as I had was the time, too, I went over there during the summer, and the boys were out there just jumping in that pond.
Oh, boy. You've been coming over and going to go swimming with them.
Had my suit in the back of the car many a time, and I don't know, guy keeps me busy.
I'm
going to
get you over one time.
Yeah, she has to drive the tractor for me, you see.
Yes.
One thing that I need is every day is to swim.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean,
well, you know those kids. You know, I can stand back and look at those kids from the time they got out of school until today when they started school. I've noticed it for the last 2-3 weeks. Johnny was so big around his middle. He wore a size 32.5 breeches around his middle here when he left school last year. He had on a pair of 32s this morning. He had to take them off and put on another pair that was smaller.
Because
he's lost so much around his middle. And Bonnie has trimmed down a lot. Even Tommy was getting big around his little middle.
Yeah.
And they've all gotten long, taller, and muscular.
Yeah.
They're getting muscular.
So thick.
Yeah, and
yeah.
Danny is nothing but a muscle-bound kid at his age.
I never saw anything like it.
He's
sure
a muscle-bound kid. I'm
all
worried about him, really, because a kid that age shouldn't be that muscular.
They're not muscular. They're just solid.
Well, when you figure now when Johnny, and when Danny is Johnny's age, what's he going to look like?
Yeah.
Little Mr. America, you know, one of these weightlifters?
Yeah.
I'm scared to death he's going to be just so tight that he won't be able to do very much.
Oh, no.
He's just nothing but a solid mass of muscle.
Yeah. And well, now, Bonnie, now, does she and the other two little girls still play, Tina and...
Oh, yes. They're very close.
Yeah.
They'd be closer yet if it wasn't for Cindy. Now, Cindy creates quite a problem because she's all left feet and all thumbs. She thinks she can do as they do and not get hurt. But everything that they do seems a little bit hard for Cindy to do.
Yeah.
And she ends up getting hurt. And then she'll cry. Or they'll run off and leave her behind. And then she'll stay and she'll come to me crying. And it makes it kind of awkward with her. Now, Bonnie and Tina get along fine.
Mm-hmm.
But when Cindy's there, she's a little bit younger.
Mm-hmm.
And It just doesn't work with the three of them. Well, that's the way it is with my five kids. Now, if I've got two of them doing something, they do it well, and there's no problem. But you get that third one in there, and there's a mess. There's a mess. So,
well,
I wish I either had four or six.
All naturally. I'm out here feeding
Faye. Well,
we're ready. Bring them in here. Let me have them. Bring them here, Faye.
They don't have to play all three of them at one time.
Well, I pair them off. Then while these two are over here playing, these two over here working, I get the oddball in the house with me to do something.
Yeah, so. I mean, Tina and Cindy and all and Shabani, they don't have to be all three at one time, do they?
No, but usually where Tina goes, Cindy tags along.
Oh, that's
it. So this is where the problem comes in. All summer long, this is what's been happening. Little Vaughn, now he can come down and play. Now, Vaughn and Danny used to play together.
Yeah.
But now Danny is getting so much bigger than Vaughn, Danny wants to do something else.
Yeah.
But it breaks his heart to have his buddy go off with Tommy to play.
Oh.
So then Danny is left in the cold. See. So he goes around with a long face and doesn't know what to do with himself when Vaughn is there.
Yeah.
And that creates a problem.
But now, what did you were bumming the one who was talking about the little boy, what's his name?
Probably Vaughn.
Vaughn, yeah.
Berman's got a good thing going on with Vaughn. He just can't stand that kid. He wants to get some meat on his bones.
Oh, he just like a neighbor, isn't he?
Yes. Boy, he just never grows. I don't know. I had high hopes this summer he'd really put on some weight, but he hasn't.
He just drinks soda pop and eats cookies.
That's all he does. And he raids my icebox from the minute he gets there to the minute he leaves.
But that's all he wants.
That's all he wants. Cake, cookies, or pie, or soft drink. And then he's disgusted when he can't find what he likes.
Oh, he's choosy.
Now, he will eat bananas and apples and grapes, so I try to have enough, you know, fruit on hand for all of them when they come. But he makes such a mess of them. He took some grapes and he had them all over the house. So now when he comes, I hand him a bunch of grapes and send them outside.
Yeah.
Or he ends up feeding the monkey half of them now. So,
yeah.
I just don't. My kids don't waste food like that. I don't know why he's like that. He's very particular about it. Faye, bring me those pears. If I'm going to sit here running my mouth, I want to do something with my hands.
You
bring them here, we'll see them.
Yeah. Yeah. Really cool. But used to, I told them that.
that channel went over around 900, I guess. And the end of the visit with Shirley this Tuesday morning after Labor Day, the 7th of September, 71. Channel went over around 900. And the end of the visit with Shirley this Tuesday after Labor Day, this first day of school. And she slipped off and looked at my calves this Tuesday, the 7th of September, 1971.